Thanks for tuning in to Jet Nation. You are listening to Joe Vinny and the Jets. Be sure to follow us at Jet Nation on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And check out our forums. Jet Nation is your home for uncensored Jets talk. Now, here's your hosts, Joe Blewett and Vinny Vladaraka.
And you are listening to the first ever edition of Joe, Vinny, and the Jets. We had a little bit of technical difficulties last week. I'm sorry for anybody who's listening. Blog Talk, you know, we were on for about 25 minutes. Blog Talk was kicking people off, muting people, throwing me off, throwing Vinny off, throwing callers off. So if there's any callers who called in last week, we apologize. We'll try to get you back on this week. But we do have a very exciting show. We have, obviously, Sheldon Talk. We're going to talk some breakout players, some underrated, overrated players. Geno's leash, some things like that. But first, let's introduce our new co-host, Vinny Vladaraka. How you doing, man?
Yep, doing pretty good, buddy. Pretty good.
So what we're going to do to start off the show, obviously, it's a little bit of a slow time at this point in the year. You know, it's beginning of July. Camp is starting on July 29th. We just figured that out today, so there's not too much going on. So what we're going to do is we're going to get to know Vinny a little bit. If you want to fast forward the first, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of the show, you don't care about Vinny, you don't care at all about him, you really don't like him, you can fast forward. But right now we're going to get to know him a little bit. So Vinny, tell us your college and your major.
What's up, man? Well, I go to Seton Hall University. I'm a double major in journalism and communication studies, and I'm about to be a senior.
About to be a senior, so hoping to get into radio, obviously. Let's give us a little introduction of how you got into the Jets. You know, is it your dad? Was it your crazy brother? Like, how did you get to, you know, be such a diehard Jets fan?
Oh man, well, I guess it starts with my grandpa, because he had season tickets with my dad and my two uncles back in since the Jets first opened. Actually, you know, going while they're playing at Shea, I believe they played in the Polo Grounds for a few years, and all the way to the Meadowlands, and now MetLife Stadium. But
my dad, you know, been taking me to games since I was, I don't know, 2 or 3 years old,
and you know, we had season tickets, me and my dad and my brother, until we were till I was about 13 or 14, until my freshman year of high school. Then my dad just couldn't take it anymore, so and me and you took over the reins a few years ago. But Jets have been in my life ever since I could really remember, and that's basically how it's always going to be.
Now it gets a little bit more interesting. I'm not saying that, you know, those stories are not interesting, but give us your least and your favorite Jets ever. Not now, but ever.
Favorite Jets players. My least favorite is going to go to, let me think, my least favorite, it's Prime Pickens, I guess. I'm going to go with Anthony Beck, old tight end, back in the early 2000s, guy would talk about brick hands, stone hands, whatever you want to call it. This guy was, equivalent to Stephen Hill, but worse. You know, that's how bad his hands were. Yeah. It was horrific. It really was. And his quarterback back then was Chad Pennington, and Chad Pennington, you know, really didn't throw that hard of a football. So I mean, it was pretty remarkable to see him drop open touchdowns. But my favorite Jet. I really liked Mark Gastineau growing up. But I think it's gonna go probably to the Big Cat. The Big Cat, the original Big Cat, 92, Sean Ellis.
Wow, yeah, my least, I'm probably going to have to go with Kyle Wilson, just because I liked the Jets, obviously, when I was little, but I got really diehard fan in, you know, 2006, 2007, you know, beginning of high school around that area. Favorite, I probably have to go, honestly, I'm going to go with the guy we actually met. I forget what year we actually went to the training camp. We met Jericho Cotchery. We figured out he had some kind of glass rod or something in his forearm, so that was pretty cool. Always loved good old Jayco. Okay, so your worst Jets and your best Jets memory.
Jayco was the man. But worst, we were there. We were there. It was terrible, you know. About 4 o'clock, you know, I enjoyed a nice Thanksgiving dinner. You know, I had some nice turkey, played a little football. You know, it was gonna be a great day going to the game that night with a few buds. Jets, Patriots, Thanksgiving, I believe, 2012, I forget what year exactly. But, you know, classic Jets, you know, classic butt fumble. To be there watching that happen unfold beneath our very own eyes was something I can't forget, even though how many times I try to, you know, try to block that out of my memory. That's something that will never, never, ever. I had, you know, nightmares about that game, still do, have flashbacks. Remember that day perfectly, and probably always will. I mean, that was just devastating. Purely devastating.
We had a little bit of alcohol in our system that day. That helped a little bit. All of the pain that we went through after that. That was a Tebow year. That was just a terrible year. It was probably honestly my worst year as a Jets fan, just overall. I wasn't around, you know, as a diehard Jets fan in the early 2000s. I was only, you know, 7, 8 years old, so I can't really talk like I actually knew too much about the game then. But, you know, 2012 was just absolutely terrible. Obviously, I forgot to mention you're a Knicks fan, which just I don't know if you're happy about what the Knicks have done in the last couple of weeks. And Porzingis and all these guys, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge, all these guys are coming to the Knicks, and then they get basically nobody. Aaron Aafalo, who is that?
Okay.
And then you're a Rangers fan. You know, they had some success, but that died off quickly. It's, you know, kind of a cup or a bust year for them. And then obviously you're a Mets fan. I'm a Mets fan, and that's just terrible. We don't have to talk too much about the Mets. They're just not a good franchise, and they never have been. But we're going to do a little bit quick fire here, Vinny. Then we're going to get into some Sheldon Richardson talk. You're going to give me your favorite players from each position. Give me a little quick, you know, answer here. Running back. Favorite running back ever.
Favorite running back ever. Easy. Curtis Martin, man.
Curtis Martin. I'm going Jamal Lewis. Wide receiver. Wide receiver. Keep it going.
Wide receiver. Winkbeck.
Randy Moss. You're just going to go with all Jets players, aren't you? Just to, you know, get the fans on your side. Obviously, really, being a bad guy on the show. Okay. Quarterback.
Quarterback. Chad Pennington.
Chad Pennington. I'm going Donovan McNabb. And I actually just saw today that he was arrested for DUI in some states. So that doesn't really help me out too much. The D-line / outside linebacker type of player.
D-line. My favorite player on the defense side was the big cat, Sean Ellis. So I'm sticking with him.
I'm gonna have to go with Julius Peppers. That guy was just an absolute beast. Linebacker.
Linebacker. Mo Lewis. Mo Lewis. Even though he ruined Drew Bledsoe's career and, you know, gave way to Tom Brady, he's one of the beasts back in the day. Minus that one play in New England. I think it was like week 4 or whatever it was that year they won the Super Bowl. But hey, Mo Lewis, guy was a beast.
I'm gonna have to go with I'm gonna say Brian Urlacher. Just the tenacity that guy played with is ridiculous. Okay, safety.
Safety, safety, safety. I really like Jim Leonard. Jim Leonard.
Jim Leonard. I don't think you have not one Jet. I think every single one of them has been Jet.
Hey, I'm.
You can tell Vinny is going to be slightly biased for this next however many months or hopefully years that we're on this show together. But that's what it's going to be. Free safety, I'm definitely going to have Brian Dawkins. Brian Dawkins is by far my favorite player in any sport. I grew up watching that guy, and he just absolutely destroyed people. And I love the way, you know, the passion he played with. The last player of any cornerback.
Cornerback, I mean, I think last time I was going to say Aaron Glenn, but I mean, I love Revis, obviously. I don't know, man. It's a toss up between Aaron Glenn and Revis. I'm going to stick with Aaron Glenn. Guy was one of the first, you know, really good cover corners, and I really like him. Really like the guy.
Yeah, I'm gonna familiar with Revis. It's just a safe pick. You know, he was just ridiculous his first couple of years here. That's when I really started getting into football. It was a couple of years before he came. He came and he probably will go down as the second or third best corner ever. Some people can argue first because obviously, you know, back in the day when Deion Sanders played, there was, you know, the rules were much more lax with penalties and things like that. But that's an argument for a different day. It's actually really hard to compare generations, so there's no point in really doing that. But now we're gonna get into some real Jets talk, Vinny. Obviously, you know, this whole offseason was great. We loved McCagnon. We love Bulls. We love all the moves they made. We're loving Leonard Williams. We're loving how training camp is going. And then I'm sitting there on a traffic post on Thursday just doing nothing, and my phone starts lighting up. You know, you're texting me. I'm getting, you know, alerts from Bleacher Report, all this stuff. And it's, you know, Sheldon Richardson is suspended 4 games for, you know, violating the substance abuse. And obviously we figured out later that he was smoking weed, which I just think is absolutely ridiculous. But give me your opinion on that, Vinny. What do you think? He's obviously out 4 games. How much do you think it hurts the team? You know, what does it do to Leonard Williams? What does it do to Mo Wilkerson? There's a couple of things to talk about here, but just give me your instant reaction when you heard this.
Man, my instant reaction was, you know, this wasn't his first time failing a test, because, you know, you can't be suspended for the first time failing a test. So right there in itself was alarming. You know, if I was like, all right, you know, he just felt this was his first test. But, I mean, this is a guy who arguably is the Jets' best player on defense. And, you know, for him to get suspended right now, it's I think it's going to hurt the team. You know, the first 4 games, you know, the home opener against the Browns, then, you know, going on Monday night to Indianapolis and to the Eagles, then division rival Miami. I mean, those are games where, you know, we needed Sheldon Richardson, obviously. But, you know, it affects Leonard Williams a lot. You know, this was a top 10 pick, obviously, a 6th overall pick. You know, he was going to have the luxury of not having to start early on his career, you know, which I think is huge, especially on a defense with all these veteran leaders, you know, all these studs in front of him. Now he's going to get his feet wet very early in his career, which I think, you know, it could be a blessing in disguise. But I mean, right now to have, you know, Sheldon Richardson not in the locker room for those first 4 games is going to be something the Jets are just going to have to deal with, I guess. You know, I mean, Mo Wilkerson, you know, this is going to affect him, obviously, too. Him and Sheldon, you know, were a tag team the last 2 years. And now, you know, Mo Wilkerson can use this to have some leverage in contract talks. But this, you know, these two guys were, you know, the Jets' two best players, and now it's going to be Mo Wilkerson trying to teach a Leonard Williams early on. You know, it's just it's very unfortunate, you know, for Sheldon Richardson and his whole Jets team. You know, especially with a rookie head coach. You know, we thought we were done with all the antics with Rex Ryan and everything last year. You know, last 5 years we had Rex here. And to see Sheldon do this is just very disappointing as a fan, you know, of this team. I thought all the circus act was over with, you know, but evidently it isn't with Sheldon Richardson. And that's going to, you know, that's going to pay some dividends early on this season.
Yeah, no, you bring up a good point that it's not like it's his first time doing it. It's not like, you know, they tested and they found a little bit of weed in his system. They actually lowered the threshold where you actually have to be basically smoking, you know, a couple of weeks before you get the test. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, it really pisses me off that a guy is making millions of dollars in the NFL and all they have to do is stop smoking for 10 years and he can go off, move to freaking Bahamas, smoke as much as he wants, do whatever he wants. And there's ways, players know there's ways around the testing systems. It's a little bit harder when you get, you know, put into a program. So I think they test more frequently, but you can figure out how to get away from these sorts of tests. You stop smoking for a couple of weeks, you take a drink, you do whatever the hell you have to do. And even then, Vinny, it's just really stupid. And I obviously don't want to use curse words on this thing, you know, on the show, but it just pisses me off that this guy who's playing for a team has to smoke weed. Then he freaking disgraces the team. He disgraces himself. He loses $3 million. Like you said, it potentially hurts Leonard Williams because obviously you want him to, it's a perfect situation, like you said, to be sitting behind these guys, sitting behind, you know, Sheldon and Harrison and Wilkerson and not have to play. And I think it's a little bit ridiculous for all the people who are saying, you know, oh, well, weed should be legalized. Weed is, you know, it's a lot better than drinking alcohol. People have died from alcohol and liver cancer and all this stuff. It really doesn't matter. That's not the point. If me or you, you know, we're 21, 22-year-old kids, so we're young. We can use that young, stupid excuse too. But I guarantee you that if either one of us walked into work and we had a meeting and they said you couldn't eat goddamn Doritos, we would not eat Doritos because we're mature and we don't need to eat the Doritos, and they tell us not to do that. So it's ridiculous that this guy just can't stop, you know, smoking for a little while. It really pisses me off. I can't believe he did that. And then people go into the topic, you know, now you have this guy who's failed the multiple drug tests. I've heard it's 2. It could be 3 or 4. We really don't know how that works. Obviously, we're not NFL officials. We're not, you know, in the NFL business. But do you think this alters the Jets' decision on, you know, extending Wilkerson, or maybe they extend Wilkerson now and they see Leonard Williams has got the first 4 games? And I'm not telling people to expect Leonard Williams to come out the first 4 games and, you know, get 4 sacks and 10 tackles or 20 tackles. He's going to come out slow. you might see him a lot in the run game, but every single rookie, even Sheldon, even Wilkerson, it takes time to develop a pass rushing game, especially in the NFL, because the tackles and guards are so much bigger, you know, and more powerful and more, you know, crafty, that it takes a little bit of time to really start developing the pass rush. But do you think this changes, you know, contract talks at all with Wilkerson?
Yeah, I mean, I really do. I mean, you know, just think of your Mo Wilkerson for the time being, you know, a homegrown player who's done everything right for this organization, hasn't held out, which he clearly could this offseason. He's been there. He's done everything right. And here comes Sheldon Richardson, who, you know, he had a little baggage in college and obviously failed at least one drug test before this previous one. So if you're Mo Wilkerson, you got to be saying, what else do I need to do? Because this is a situation next year the Jets are going to be faced with Sheldon Richardson. You know, Sheldon Richardson's going to want a new contract, you know, and I can guarantee you he's going to want, you know, something around that Ndamukong Suh contract. He's going to want to get paid. He's going to get paid a lot. And if I'm the Jets right now, you know, I try to extend Mo Wilkerson, you know, because now you look to yourself in a year from now with Sheldon Richardson. Who knows what's going to happen after his 4-game suspension? You know, what if he comes in, you know, overweight, out of shape, which I don't think is going to be the case. But I mean, if you're the Jets, you gotta be safe. You know, you gotta sign Mo Wilkerson when you can. And this is it. You know, he's 25 years old. You know, entering the peak of his career. I mean, obviously the same with Sheldon Richardson, who the Jets I think viewed as the better player of the two, but I mean, and you know, how many times off the field character issues plagued the NFL player over the last 5-10 years? You know, it's just every year you've seen a star player get suspended, and it's just, I mean, something Mo Wilkerson has never done. You know, the guy lives 20 minutes from MetLife Stadium. He wants to be a Jet. I mean, if I'm Mo Wilkerson's agent, I give the Jets a call and be like, what else do we need to do in order to get me signed? Because it's a joke at this point. I think you got to pay the man.
No, and then, you know, you make great points. And then you look at the fact that Wilkerson is probably going to demand right around $13.5 million. And he really hasn't come out in public and said anything. He's come out with a little bit of stuff on Twitter, you know, when people got signed and said little things like that. But you're already hearing that, you know, Sheldon Richardson's coming out and he's talking about getting paid $100 million. He's getting paid all this money. He wants top contract money. He's talking about getting, Sue money. So he's probably going to be asking around $16 million a year. And you can tell that Sheldon's the kind of guy who cares much more about himself than the team. And obviously all NFL players are like that. But a guy like Mo Wilkerson, I think if he gets a fair deal, he's really going to want to stay with the Jets. So we're going to see how that really works out. And, you know, you need that money. You look at the team right now. You look at us paying Revis and Cromartie and Brandon Marshall, and then DeBrickashaw Ferguson is getting paid $14 million next year. Are we going to cut DeBrickashaw Ferguson? Are we going to try to, you know, negotiate a contract to make him take some less money? So, you know, is it worth it to pay a guy in Sheldon Richardson who's probably going to be asking for top-notch money while you know, Wilkerson will be asking for $3-4 million less while he's a better guy in the locker room? He's been a, you know, like you said, he lives 20 minutes away from the Jets' practice facilities, and he clearly wants to be here. When a guy like Sheldon is failing drug tests, and obviously if he fails another one, it turns into 8 games. If he fails another one, it turns into 16. Look at Josh Gordon and look at Justin Blackmon. Look how much talent they have, and then look what happens. When the last time you heard about Justin Blackmon, and remember all the talent he had coming out of college? It's just, it's ridiculous. So we're going to see what happens with that Vinny. We're going to get back to that in a little bit. For we are going to try bringing a phone caller on. We had a whole bunch of problems with this last week. We're going to try to bring Kevin on right now. Last week, it was not working at all. And now he left. So we're going to bring Glenn on, and we're going to see what Glenn wants to talk about. Glenn, can you hear me?
I can. How you doing, guys?
Okay. Thanks.
What's going on,
this worked. We had some major technical difficulties last week. Glenn was a part of them, so Glenn knows what we went through. But obviously, follow Glenn on Twitter at AceFan23. He writes very, very good articles for Jet Nation. He covers just about everything. He interviews people. Go check him out on Jet Nation. I really, really strongly recommend it. Glenn, what is up?
How you doing, guys? thanks for the kind words, first off. But, yeah, just wanted to talk about the Sheldon thing. You guys are bringing up excellent points. And, I mean, let's face it, it's anyone who's talking about the Jets are pretty much coming from the same place and saying that this really puts them in a difficult spot because – you know, you have Mo, who, as we say, he's played at a high level, and he's done all the right things. He's, you know, probably not, you know, when all said and done, he probably won't be as good as Sheldon Richardson. but he's still a very good player in his own right. So now the Jets, obviously, they have Mo for the next couple of years. Sheldon's only a couple of years into his rookie deal, but, you know, and I don't begrudge Sheldon. I know a lot of these guys. It is a job to them. He's made it pretty clear. He's in this for the money. And again, I don't hold that against him. When I was younger and I was a kid, that used to bother me. But, you know, you grow up and realize it's work for them. And when they asked Sheldon last year when things weren't going well, you know, they said, hey, you still play so hard. What keeps you going? He said, look, it's about the money. I want to get paid. And then, you know, a few weeks ago when they talked to him about Muhammad Wilkerson's deal, he said, you know, he said, we want that Sue money. We want that J.J. Watt money. So yeah. Even though the Jets have his rights for the next few years with franchise tags and all that, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if he pulls Darrelle Revis aside and says, listen, man, tell me how you made this work. Because Darrelle Revis has been paid like a franchise quarterback over the last 5 or 6 years for being a dominant defensive player. So they may have Sheldon under contract, but I'd be shocked if he doesn't hold out after year three if he plays well. Because let's face it, season's not underway. It's 4 games. It's frustrating. The silver lining is that it's the one position on the field where they could afford to lose a guy for a few games. But if Sheldon Richardson comes out in week six and gets himself a couple sacks and finishes the year with, you know, 8 or 9 sacks, which he could do with this secondary. I mean, what him and Muhammad Wilkerson might be able to do this year is just, you know, if it's one of those things. It's all ifs at this point, but if everyone plays to their potential, you have Pro Bowl corners and two of the best defensive ends in football who are going to have time to get to the quarterback. So it's rough now. People are upset now. You know, I'm mad too. You don't want to see one of your best guys go out for something stupid. It's so careless, which, you know, that brings in a question is dedication. You know, a lot of people got on him for missing, you know, for not coming to voluntary workouts. And I get that they're voluntary. You know, we all understand that. But when you're a diehard fan, you're emotionally invested in a team, and you just can't fathom the thought that why does this guy not want to be there and get better with his teammates? But it just comes back to it's a job, you know, and that's what a lot of people say. Hey, if your job asked you to come in on a day that wasn't mandatory, would you come in? And most people wouldn't, because people don't want to be at work when they don't have to. So it's a job to him, and that frustrates fans. They want that level of commitment that wasn't there. And now you find out he gets suspended, which, as you guys have said, means he's had multiple positive tests. So those are two big red flags that bring into question this level of commitment. So now you're looking at it going, this is a guy, we know he's about the money. We know he's not 100% invested. And then we have on the opposite side, Muhammad Wilkerson, who does all the right things. You know, of course, he skipped the voluntaries this year too. But that's, you know, that's kind of common practice for guys that are in his particular situation. He's further along. He's closer to a new deal than what Sheldon is. But he's been the good soldier. He's a local guy. And I really think the Jets, looking at all the money they spent this offseason and the fact that none of it went to Mo, I really feel like they were looking down the road as possibly using him as a trade chip. But now what do you do if you trade him and then Sheldon holds out and demands a trade? Now you've gone from one of the best D-lines in the NFL to a good D-line. And that you know, that can be crippling. So he's put them in a really tough spot, where they may have to change direction on whatever they were planning with Mo. Maybe if they were looking to sign him down the road, they ramp that up and try to get something done sooner. Not that I think they will, but I just think they're in a tough spot because there are enough questions there now in regard to Sheldon Richardson's commitment, and there are no questions about Mo Wilkerson, his conduct, his character, and his commitment. So he's just closer to a payday. So the Jets have to make that call, and it's not an easy one to make. And I wouldn't want – because, you know, typical Jets luck, this will go wrong. Whoever leaves is going to be the Hall of Famer, you know, and the guy who stays is going to be the one that, you know, if Sheldon stays, he's going to be another Josh Gordon. You know, of course, you know, we don't know that to be true, but that's the paranoia we have as Jets fans, because so often, for one reason or another, things don't work out with our first-rounders. Even when we draft a great one like a Revis, he wants a new contract every 18 months, and then he leaves and goes and wins the Super Bowl in New England. It's great that he's back. That's awesome. But you look at the way things unfolded with him, and now you have Sheldon, who's the next great first-rounder they have, and things aren't looking so great with him down the line. So I think there is a sense of, you know, people waiting for what's going to happen next. You know, some people are outraged. You know, let's trade him, let's send the message, but he's just too good and too young to give up on. Yeah, but what do you do if you're the Jets in this situation? You know, it's in terms of Muhammad Wilkerson, because you know, if you want to keep all of them, how much can you pay all these guys? You know, Wilkerson's going to want
exactly. You
know, 11, 12 million a year, and I guarantee you, in a year or two, Sheldon's going to want more than that. Sheldon's going to want 15 in 2 years, and
yeah.
You know, and then you got Leonard Williams. Of course, he's several years down the road, but you can only spend so much on a position group. So, not a great spot to be in for them.
You made like 10 different really good points there, and I'm probably not going to get to all of them, Glenn. But you know, you talk about you know Sheldon. At least the only good thing about this, and there's not really many good things about it, but at least it happened. You know, if it happened next year after we franchised Muhammad Wilkerson and we really had to make a decision right now, it really, really put us in a you know, our hands tied behind our back kind of situation. But at least we have a whole entire year to figure this out. It's not the first time, obviously, but I think if he gets suspended again and it goes into that 8-game range, then the next time he does it, it turns into the 16 games. That's going to really, really get serious. But like you said, you know, you're talking about paying a guy in Sheldon Richardson, who, like you said, he's probably the second best or third best. I'm going to say the second best. I'm not just being biased. I'm a Jets fan. 3-4 defensive end in football. Obviously, J.J. Watt's the first. But I actually saw a stat the other day on ESPN, and I believe it was something like that. In the last 10 years, over two seasons, Sheldon Richardson has the most tackles out of a defensive lineman in the entire NFL within that two-year span. So you see how much he makes an impact. He doesn't light it up in the stat sheet, in the sacks at least. But it's only his second year last year, so you can really see him make a jump this year, especially, like you said, with a guy like Revis, with a guy like Cromartie. If he can put up those numbers with, you know, Marcus Williams, Darren Walls, Phillip Adams, and guys off the street, can you imagine how much time he's going to have to get to the quarterback now? Obviously, even that second, he's going to have another second to reach his arm out and grab that quarterback, and it's going to happen. You're going to see his numbers shoot up. You're going to see even a guy like Duzible, who people really underrate him. He's a very, very versatile player.
He's a very good player.
And to have him behind these guys, with Leonard Williams behind these guys, this defensive line is going to be absolutely it's going to be scary. But like I said, you know, Glenn, what are you going to decide to do if you're Mike Maccagnan and you have a guy in Mo Wilkerson who's a homegrown talent? Obviously Sheldon is too, but Mo loves this team. He wants to be here. He's going to play for less money. I think he's going to be around the $13 million range, especially when you see guys like Robert Quinn and Junior Gallette and all these guys get around that range. I think he's going to demand around 13. But you know that if this happened to a guy like Sheldon this year, he would not be coming to mini camps. He would not be participating in July. He'd be holding out. So are you going to pay a guy in Mo Wilkerson $13 million a year, or are you going to pay a guy in Richardson $16 million a year? He's probably going to hold out. He's going to want all of his guaranteed money. And then on top of that, like you said, Glenn, you know, you look at this team, you can't pay – there's going to be three positions. And obviously I know that Todd Bowles is going to play the 4-3. He's going to play hybrid look. He's going to play, you know, some 4-6s. But he's still – you have three – you're playing a 3-4 defensive lineman line look. So are you going to pay four guys for three positions, or are you going to take some of that money and you're going to allocate it to the, you know, the offensive line, which needs some help right now? Are you going to put that to tight end? Are you going to put that to maybe getting a speedy running back? Are you going to look to get a free safety if Fields doesn't work out? So, you know, are you going to pay Mo that $13 million, or would you have to pay, you know, would you rather pay a guy like Sheldon $16 million when he's a little bit more of a risk?
Yeah, and again, that's the conundrum. So it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds. I'd hate to see Mo go and then Sheldon get dinged again for a positive, and then he's out for a half a season, because that's a world of difference. Four games you can live with. You lose a guy of his caliber for a half a season. That's going to be tough to overcome. So they have some thinking to do, and you know, hopefully it's a learning experience for this guy. You know, the example people always use is Chris Carter. You know, heavy into drugs early in his career, and you know, for him it took getting cut and getting let go to wake up. And hopefully this does it. But you know, I'm not super hopeful, because as we know, it had to take multiple positives for it to get to this point. So you know, the fact that it's made public and he's, you know, you would hope he's embarrassed by this, but we don't know what any of these guys feel, because again, it is a job to them. He's not losing any sleep about losing money. You know, he knows that at the end of the day, he's got enough talent that someone's going to pay him. But again, he could smoke his way out of the league. So it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds. But you're doing a great job, guys. So thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, really appreciate it, Glenn. Like I said, check him out, AceFan23 on Twitter. You can go to JetNation.com. He's all over the place. He's probably one of the best, if not one of the best, writers we got. So definitely go check him out. And, Glenn, thank you so much for joining our show.
All right, have a great night, guys.
Thanks, Glenn. Peace.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, so Vinny, obviously, Zach is on the line. We're going to get to him in a couple of minutes. But tell me your opinion. Obviously, you know, you got Sheldon, who's more of a risk. He's come out and said he wants around that $100 million a year range. You know he'll hold up for his money. He's definitely, without a doubt, one of the, you know, he's not as mature, I can say, as a guy like Muhammad Wilkerson, who really wants to be here. And you feel like that's the kind of guy who wants to, you know, retire as a Jet. He's a Jericho Cottry type of guy who will be here for a while, who doesn't, you know, cause many problems. But a guy like Sheldon, like Glenn said, is more of like a Revis type who wants his money. He obviously loves the team and he loves being on the defensive line. But when it comes down to team versus the money, he's going to choose the money. And obviously I understand that most players do choose the money, but they factor in the team a little bit. I think Wilkerson will take a little bit, give the team a little bit of a discount. I don't think it'll be much, but, you know, what are you going to do if you're in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when it comes down to the negotiate contract with Sheldon Richardson, you know, McCagnan's going to bring this up. And, you know, it's probably going to, you know, affect their talks, and it's probably going to stall Sheldon Richardson. And I bet you anything, if Sheldon Richardson was in Muhammad Wilkerson's shoes, the amount of tweets, the amount of, you know, press conferences of Sheldon Richardson showing, you know, his need for money in times where, you know, he obviously wants the money right now in his life and his contract. It's going to be a total, you know, total nightmare. It's going to be the whole Revis all over again. We witnessed how that went through in Hard Knocks. But I mean, this is going to be, it's going to be something. You know, McCagnan's going to be his first real test, I think. You know, it's he made all the right moves this offseason, and this is his first hiccup. You know, the first hiccup, not for him, first hiccup that he has, you know, come into play as GM of the Jets. It's going to be something I mean, it's going to be, I'm not, you know, who knows what he's going to do. This guy who's not used to this. You know, he come in, he was a scout. You know, he wasn't used to, you know, all this failed drug testing where he came from in Houston. So, I mean, it's going to be something that, you know, it's going to obviously factor in. You know how Woody Johnson got when Darrelle Revis wanted more money. He obviously got on his bad side, but now he's back on his good side somehow just because, you know, obviously got that ring and that's what Woody Johnson wants. But, I mean, it's going to be really tough to see what they do. I think you got to keep Mo Wilkerson. You know, this guy, you know, what else more does he have to do?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. And obviously, McCagnan has had some tests. Obviously, you know, free agency, he wasn't doing like Isaac did, where he was lowballing players, let them walking out the door, and just think, you know, the New York market would draw them in, which he's actually been talking about recently with all these free agents with the NBA. And something interesting, you know, the New York market isn't as big as it used to be, you know, in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, because now guys like Damian Lillard and people like, you know, Richard Sherman out in Washington and all these things they're getting the same kind of money that people in New York are. Obviously, they can take a plane, fly over here. It takes a couple hours. So playing in New York isn't as big, you know, as it used to be. But, you know, there's 3 years left on Sheldon's rookie deal. Obviously, you have Wilkerson for this year and the next year if you want. You have to see how Leonard Williams, you know, really how he fills in, how he plays the first couple games, how he plays down the season. Because obviously, like I've been saying, I believe that the stat is that Bowles plays four of his defensive linemen over 400 snaps. So we'll definitely see a lot of Leonard Williams. We'll see how that plays out. And thank God that we have some more time to figure this out, because if it was, you know, this was Moe's last year and Sheldon was almost done with his rookie deal and all these things, it would definitely hurt a lot. And it's going to be interesting to talk about. Hopefully Sheldon doesn't come out with another failed drug test, because then if he does, he's suspended 8 games and the writing's kind of on the wall there. Like I said, I don't think you could pay four defensive linemen for only 3 spots that you can be on the field. Obviously, there'd be some hybrid looks and things like that, but it'll be interesting to see. But right now, we're going to bring on Zach. Zach, what's up?
Yeah, what's going on, guys?
What up? How you doing, man? You want
good,
to talk about
good.
Geno? Hit us with some Geno talk. He hasn't came out of our mouth yet.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like I've, you know, heard and seen with Geno, you know, in camp, you know, obviously, he's, you know, definitely, you know, progressing, he's improving, you know, the coaches, you know, they like to see, you know, they're definitely liking what they see in terms of, you know, how he's progressing and how he's, you know, turning into, you know, a man who, you know, is not going to make, you know, rookie mistakes and is very, you know, he'll take the blame upon himself. And, you know, so I really think, you know, Geno's really progressed in his game and, you know, in terms of, you know, maturing, you know, standing up, you know, taking some of the shots, you know, if he makes mistakes, you know. But, I mean, I honestly think, you know, this is probably going to be Geno Smith's, I don't know what you call, breakout year, or, you know, in terms of, you know, I think he's going to be really good, you know, this year. I think the Jets will definitely, you know, definitely be a contender for the playoffs. You know, and I really love, you know, what McKagan did this offseason. You know, he really focused on, you know, the Jets' needs, you know, what they needed. You know, they obviously needed receiver help, and they got Brandon Marshall, and, you know, obviously they drafted Devin Smith. But then he also went back and he got back the guys who the Jets really missed, you know, last year, and that was, you know, Revis and Cromartie. That was a really huge pickup. I think he, you know, did amazing, you know, in picking, you know, those two big guys up. And then, you know, the small moves, you know, adding Marcus Gilchrist, you know, adding, you know, the safety from they used to be on the Browns. And then, you know, just really overall, you know, I think, you know, McKagan's done his job, you know, and now it's up to Geno. And this is really his make or break year. I mean, I think he's going to do very well this year. I think he'll take the Jets into the playoffs, you know, and you just got to see where it goes from there. I think, you know, they're in a great position. They're in a great spot. And, you know, their limits are the sky. So, you know, you just got to hope for the best. And, you know, whatever the outcome is, you know, hopefully it will be a good one for this team.
Yeah, man, I definitely agree with you, Zach. You know, I think McKagan made all the right moves. You know, I think bringing in Chan Gailey, installing this spread system with Geno's used to in college, where he had, I believe, it was like 98 touchdowns to 20, 21 interceptions. I mean, obviously, you're not going to see those types of numbers for Geno, but I mean, he did everything right for him. Like you said, bringing in a top 10 receiver in my mind, and Brandon Marshall, bringing in a Devin Smith, you know, signing running backs left and right, you know, bringing in help all over the place for Geno Smith. You know, at this point of his career, there is no more excuses for Geno Smith. You know, I really like what he did this offseason, moving in with Brandon Marshall. You know, Brandon Marshall, obviously the crafty vet, you know, putting some knowledge in Geno Smith's head. And for the first time in his career with the Jets, Geno Smith comes into camp as the number one guy. You know, past 2 years, it's always been, you know, it's going to be a quarterback battle. It's going to be debate for a quarterback. And now what I really like was Chan Gailey coming in, you know, his first press conference saying Geno Smith's our starter. And, you know, and the best part about that is, you know, when they brought in Ryan Fitzpatrick, that's what they told him. They didn't, it's not like last year when they brought in Michael Vick saying, hey, you know, you're going to, you know, there's a chance you're going to be a starter. You know, you're going to be coming. You're coming in as 1B in the depth chart. You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, the guy who's been there with Chan Gailey, been in the NFL for 10 years. You know, comes in with some veteran leadership behind Geno Smith, and this is where, you know, this has to be the year Geno Smith steps up for his team. When you look around, you know, look at our offensive linemen, Birksall, Ferguson, Cologne, Mangold. They're all in their, you know, 30s, 31. You know, they're obviously, you know, on the wrong side of 30. And you look at our defense, Revis just hit the 30 mark. Cromartie's 31. You know, there's a small window for this Jets team, which McKagan did an excellent job putting together to, you know, to succeed. You know, they got a small window, and obviously without good quarterback play, the Jets aren't going to go far. So, I mean, Geno Smith, you know, has no more excuses, has two top 20 receivers in Decker and Marshall. You know, Jeff Crumbling really has to step up this year. But, I mean, even if he doesn't, Jason Morrow had a nice, solid rookie year. You add Devin Smith, you remember, we still have Jeremy Curley, got Chris Ivory. I mean, there's the list goes on and on and on. And I think, you know, I think you're right. And this has to be Geno's year. I'm not saying he has to have a great year. He just has to have a top 15, top 20 year even, you know, just limited turnovers, which is obviously, you know, hard to say. You know, he's 34 interceptions over his first 2 years as quarterback for the Jets, but you know, it's a different atmosphere. In MetLife Stadium with a new coach, new system, you know, new offense coordinator. You know, it's going to be a whole different Geno, I think, this year, and I think it's really going to benefit him.
Yeah, no, and then you look at Brandon Marshall. Brandon Marshall, I think, is going to help a guy like Geno, helping him out, you know, with routes, with throws. Obviously, you guys mentioned the offense. We've been talking about Chan Gailey's spread system where, you know, there's less reads. You obviously get the ball out quicker. There's a lot of screen type of plays. So that's definitely going to help Geno out. Look at Bowles, who I think, honestly, a lot of people haven't talked about Bowles and how he'll help Geno out, but I guarantee you that if a guy like Geno misses a meeting like he did before the Chargers game, that he won't be playing or he'll, you know, he'll get punished. So I think a guy like Bowles will definitely help him. You said a guy like Jason Morrow, who, for whatever reason, only played 34% of the snaps last year. He obviously had some drop problems. He had 6 drops, but then you see a Broncos game where I believe he had 10 catches and a touchdown. So a guy like Jason Morrow is there, a guy like Brandon Marshall is there, Decker's there. And obviously, you know, back in the day, a guy like Aaron Rodgers would sit. All these guys would sit. So now it's his third year. You've seen a lot of defenses. You've seen all these looks. You know what you have to do. You have the talent. You know, he doesn't have any excuses. This is definitely his last year. He has the weapons. He has the coaching. Obviously, it's going to take a little bit. You know, they're not going to come out in the first, I think a lot of people expect the Jets, you know, the first three, four games to come out guns blazing and be, you know, as hot as they can ever be. It's going to take a little while. There's going to be some, you know, lapses in coverages from Bowles' defense because they're trying to get used to each other. There's going to be some stupid plays on offense. But as long as Geno plays like, you know, maybe like an Alex Smith type of level, you know, with his defense, with this defensive line, with these linebackers, with this secondary, he's not going to need to score a lot of points. There'll be a lot of games where he only has to score, you know, 14, maybe even 10 points to win his game. There's going to be some games where the Jets only let up, you know, six to 9 points, potentially even 3 points. Maybe, hopefully, to God, we'll see a shutout. I'll go absolutely crazy. But he doesn't have to do a lot. He has to limit turnovers. He has to limit mistakes. He can't take any, you know, 20-yard sacks like he did a couple times last year to put us out of field goal range. But going on from that, Zach, you know, what are you expecting from Geno in the first couple of games? Like, give me an example. Like, what does stats have to look like for the first couple of games, and how many games do you give him? If he comes out and he struggles, you know, versus the Colts or the Eagles, and he struggles versus the Browns, you know, how many games do you give him before you, you know, put him on the bench and put a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick? And what kind of stats, you know, realistic stats do you want to see from a guy like Geno in his first couple of games? Because obviously, you know, you saw the end of his first year. The last four games, he was very impressive. The last 4 years the last four games of last year, he had a top five quarterback rating, I believe. And in the last game, he obviously had the only perfect quarterback rating in the NFL. So he has some potential. He can make the throws and he can make the plays, but, you know, he's so sporadic and he's so inconsistent. So, you know, how many games do you give him before you pull him if he's just not playing well?
You know, I think he's, you know, this is going to be a year where, you know, all us Jet fans, you know, should be really, you know, excited for, you know, really pumped for. I think this is going to be a phenomenal year. I mean, you're talking about, I think this could be one of the best Jet teams, you know, we've seen in a long time in terms of, you know, completeness on both sides of the ball, which we haven't had, you know, for how many years it's been. I mean, for Geno, I think, you know, the first four or five games will be a big test. I think he'll stand up. I think in the first four games, I think he'll throw, you know, definitely over 200 yards. I mean, in terms of throwing, he has a threat. He has a deep ball threat. And whether it's Smith, Decker, or Marshall, remember, this is something he didn't have before. I mean, I'm expecting huge things for him this year in terms of, you know, passing yards. I think he can definitely throw in the first four games, you know, definitely 200 yards at least, if not more. And, you know, I can see him throwing easily, you know, three, maybe four touchdowns, you know, in each of those games. You know, I'm expecting big things from Geno Smith. I think he's going to stand up. I think this is a year, you know, that we should be, you know, excited for. I think this should really be his year.
Yeah, no, man, like I think you got to look.
You go ahead, buddy.
Oh, go ahead, Benny. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, you know, you should realize Geno Smith just has to manage the game. You know, with this offense, he's not going to be asked to throw the ball over, I would say, 25 times a game. With a guy like Ivory, with a guy like Powell, if Stephen Ridley is not hurt opening the season, those are three really good running backs. You know, you see what Stephen Ridley did 2 years ago, and you know what Chris Ivory can do. You know what Bilal Powell can do when given the opportunity. So you put those guys in the mix. You know, I mean, I think the Jets, with this offensive line, again, it's another veteran offensive line with the Brickishaw, you know, Mangold, Cologne. You know, I really like the James Carpenter adding. You know, it's the team where, you know, Geno Smith's just going to have to control a game. You know, I like 200 yards. You know, I mean, that's a fair thing to say for Geno. It's a fair comparison, you know, to throw out there. It's a nice number to throw out there. But, I mean, I think you're looking at 200 yards, I'd say two touchdowns, and, you know, just under two picks a game. You know, under hopefully around one turnover a game. Because, you know, Geno Smith, you know, you can't go into this season thinking he's not going to, you know, turn over the ball like he has done the past two seasons. You know, it's you know, in this time in his career, he's good for that 1, 2, 3, 4 turnover game every once in a while. So, I mean, I really like what the Jets did bringing all these pieces. You know, again, about 20 to 25 passes a game for Geno Smith. Again, with this defense, he's not going to be asked to throw the ball 30, 40 times and try to win us the game. I think that's going to happen, you know, hopefully never. But, you know, Geno, again, like Chan Gailey has said, he can make all the throws in the book. We've seen what he did, you know, in those last four games of his first 2 years. But again, those games didn't mean anything. You know, when it comes to meaningful games, let's see what Geno Smith can do with an actual team around him. I'm not saying, you know, last year, his first two years of teams, you know, weren't that great, but they really weren't. You know, compared to this team, this is Geno Smith back in college, you know, back in the spread system with a solid, very, very solid, it could be a top five defense with this year's team. I'm definitely expecting a top five defense, and that alone, you know, just having a top like an Alex Smith, just a guy who can manage the game, a Chad Pennington a few years ago, just a guy who's gonna, you know, have double as much touchdowns and interceptions, you know, maybe 25 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. That's the type of year I'm looking for Geno Smith to have. You know what he can do with his feet. He can add four to five more touchdowns on the ground with him with that fake option, all that stuff that the Jets can do, especially in the spread offense.
No more option, Vinny. Pitching Vic the ball and running routes and hitting off Geno and almost picking. I agree with you, Vinny. You know, 200 yards a game, maybe 250. If he can average, you know, 200 to 250 yards a game, and I don't know about three to four touchdowns. I think if Geno got 3 to 4 touchdowns in the first couple of games, every Jets fan is absolutely bananas. But if you're looking at a 24 touchdown and a 12 pick a year, you know, Jets fans would definitely be happy with that. I think we would be able to keep Geno after that. We'll talk about that in a little bit, Vinny. You know, the stats you'd expect from him. But like you said, you know, or like I said before, you know, if he, there's going to be games where the teams are only going to score 6, 9, 12, 14 points a game. So if he can put up, you know, 200, 250 yards, there'll be games where he puts up 300 yards, hopefully, at least we're hoping. But with these weapons, you know, he really, really needs to step it up. He needs to manage the game. He needs to not turn it over in the red zone. And you look at his defense, a lot of times last year he was starting from, you know, the 10, 20-yard line in his own territory. This year he's going to be starting, you know, 30, 40 yard line. That's going to make a difference. That's 3 points. There's a whole bunch of times where we ended the drive at, you know, midfield. And if you take those 20 yards that the defense will give us, that's a 30-yard line, you get a field goal. So as long as he doesn't turn over in the red zone, you look at these guys, look at these weapons, all these big guys we have in the red zone. You look at Devin Smith taking the top off the defense. He definitely has an opportunity to really shine. But, Zach, we thank you for the call. We have to get to some other calls. We actually have a busy phone line tonight. And we definitely do appreciate the support, Zach. Obviously, this is the first edition of Joe Vinny and the Jets. But you've called in just about every week. We really do appreciate you, and we hope to hear from you again next week.
Likewise, guys. Take care.
Later, Zach.
You too, guys.
And now we are going to Will, who wants to talk about quarterbacks. Will, can you hear us?
I can hear you guys. How you doing?
What's going on? What's Will, up, man? I really appreciate it. I know you're waiting a little bit there, but you know, hit us with some more quarterback talk. What do you think?
I'm a Jets fan, a long time, first time listener here. How can you justify giving Geno Smith another year? I just don't understand. You bring in Brandon Marshall, guy's a beast, but he's coming off the season end and injury here. What's the point of having Brandon Marshall when, you know, Geno's going to overthrow him by 5 yards? And in the first round, you take a defensive end when the defense isn't the problem. If you're going to bring in Brandon Marshall, you got to bring some help into the offensive line or get a running back that can really pass protect here. I don't understand the moves. I was hoping you could kind of clarify for me.
Okay, well, first of all, with Geno, the thing I really think about it is, you know, I don't think that the Jets and Todd Bowles and Chan Gailey are completely sold on him. But when you look at a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, what is Ryan Fitzpatrick going to turn into? He's going to give you maybe a year or two of decent play, and then Jets are going to look for a new quarterback in a couple of years. So I think that Geno Smith is really just basically the Jets' only option, the only hope for a franchise quarterback. Obviously, you have a guy like Bryce Petty who's a question mark, and you can't start him in his first year coming out of Baylor with the spread. So Geno, you know, he's a potential long-term option. Last year he had Decker, who was out a decent amount of the year. He had hamstring problems. He had Morning Warnerweg, who, you know, me and you both will, and even Vinny, know how many questionable calls that a guy like Morning Warnerweg made. Obviously, the Lions game, you know, a guy like Chris Ivory is just completely pounding the ball down the Lions' throat, running for, I believe it was 50 or 60 yards in the first drive, and he's out for a couple of drives after that. You give Geno a guy like Chan Gailey with a spread offense, with these weapons with Marshall, and all these things, you know, he has potential. Let's just say that he has potential, and as long as he has a 10% chance of doing it, you know, it's better than a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, who has, you know, no shot of being a potential long-term answer because he's obviously up there in age, and he's a journeyman quarterback. So Geno still has a chance. We saw the last four games of his rookie year. We saw the last four games of last year. So we have to see if he can put, you know, a consistent string of games together, and we have Fitzpatrick as a backup option. But I think the leash is definitely shorter than it was last year because we have playoff potential. So that's what I think about that. But, you know, with Leonard Williams in the sixth pick, you know, I've talked about it before. If you take a guy like a Vic Beasley or like a Kevin White who was there, they definitely were not as highly rated as a guy like Leonard Williams. And maybe the Jets did know about a thing like with Sheldon Richardson. It does come out a lot later, than it comes out. Let's just say it comes out later than they figured out. They figured out months and months before, so they potentially knew about this. They knew how good a guy like Leonard Williams was. He was the top of a lot of people's draft boards, and a lot of draft experts really thought he was the number one guy. So are you really going to pass upon a guy like Leonard Williams, who has a chance to be the best player in this draft, for a guy like Vic Beasley, who's very comparable to a guy like Vernon Golston, who shot up the boards because of combines, because of things like this? And you look at a guy like a Kevin White, who also shot up the boards because of, you know, a combine. He ran a fast 40, but I'm telling you right now, I've seen tape on him, and he does not play as fast as his 40 times. So are you going to take a risk on a guy like that, or are you going to take a guy like Leonard Williams, who was just absolutely dominant at USC? And then, you know, talk about taking offensive linemen. You know, honestly, I liked Brandon Scherff, but I don't know if it's really worth it to take a guard that early. They brought in James Carpenter. They have some young talent, and, you know, we'll see what happens. But, Vinny, what do you think? What do you think about, you know, Leonard Williams and then Geno, maybe not starting and then giving a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick the job?
I mean, right now, I mean, sad to say it, but Geno Smith is our best option at quarterback right now. Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, I think he's 32 or now 33, and he's coming up our year where he broke his leg. I mean, obviously, he's familiar with Chan Gailey, had his best years under Chan Gailey. And I bet you, you know, if Geno Smith, you know, if he slips, you know, if he continues his irregularities from last year early on, his first 2 years of his season, of his career, it's gonna be Ryan Fitzpatrick's teams early on. So, I mean, right now, Geno Smith, you know, the Jets had done all the right things to make him a better quarterback, make him a better player right now by bringing in, you know, Brandon Marshall. You know, he's on the wrong side of 30, but, you know, this is a guy who can do it. You know, last year, you know, with all the things going on in that locker room in Chicago, he still put up pretty good numbers. You know, he didn't play, you know, like you said, he got hurt early, late in the season, still put up around 800 yards. You know, he can score. You know, the guy can do. The guy's going to demand double coverage. You know, he's going to open room for a guy like Devin Smith, for a guy like Jeremy Curley, we've seen what he can do on one-on-one coverage. You know, in that slot, he can just abuse slot cornerbacks. And then Eric Decker, I mean, this guy almost had 1,000 yards with virtually no help last year. So, I mean, I really think Geno Smith, you know, obviously if he stumbles, it's not going to be his job anymore. But for the Jets, it is their best option. He can scramble. He can elude pressure. You know, when he shined last year, especially in that last game against Miami, we've seen the kind of throws he can make on the run. Even in that Green Bay game, week two, you know, he's seen the kind of throws he had to make. And he's made, you know, he's shown flashes throughout his whole career. But like you said early on, Joe, you know, he's just so sporadic and so inconsistent over his first 2 years. And I mean, I'm not going to say I feel bad for him or I was going to know that's going to happen, but his first 2 years of the NFL, I mean, it's a big transition, especially from, you know, West Virginia, when it was all on offense, coming to a Jets team when their head coach didn't know the first thing about an offense with Rex Ryan. So, I mean, I really think bringing Chan Gailey, that's the right move. But again, going to the draft, I mean, Leonard Williams was, you know, like you said, the first or second best player on the board, you know, and with Mariota gone, with Winston gone, no way the Jets could have sprung for a quarterback there. You know, if they didn't bring in Brandon Marshall, I could bet, you know, Kevin White would be on his team, bringing, you know, two West Virginia guys with Kevin White and Geno Smith together. But I mean, Leonard Williams, I think, is the right move. And now, even with the Sheldon Richardson, you know, scandal, you know, this draft
looks great.
Looks brilliant. You know, it looks absolutely brilliant. But I mean, I'm not saying the Jets knew that. You know, I'm assuming they knew that he failed at least one drug test. So they're saying, you know, even if he didn't, I think you still have to draft a guy like Leonard Williams. I mean, you know, everything we heard, you know, it's a once in a decade type of player, but yet he hasn't played a snap. So, I mean, there's going to be concern no matter who the Jets drafted. But, I mean, to draft, you know, arguably the best players, it was the right thing to do, especially for a first-time GM, a first-time head coach.
Yeah, and that, you know, you see – oh, go ahead, Will. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a question there for Vinny. Yeah. Let's just say, you know, Geno Smith has a first three games, four games, crash and burn. Ryan Fitzpatrick can't get it together. This is looking ahead here, but, you know, right across the town there, you know, Eli Manning's in his last year of his contract. He says he's fine playing out his contract. I mean, what are the odds, seriously, we could pull the two-time MVP away from the Giants and get him in green?
Oh, man, that would be something, first off. I mean, in order to do that, I think the Giants would want a guy like Sheldon Richardson, multiple first-round draft picks. But, I don't think. I mean, hey, I would love a 2-time Super Bowl MVP with the Jets. You know, I mean, only could dream for that. But you know, if Geno crashes and burns first 4 games heading into that bye, I think it's going to be Ryan Fitzpatrick after that bye. You know, I mean, I think it's a really good bye for this Jets team. You know, it's the week 5 bye is really. I think it's going to be, you know, really good because if this team is grooving along, you know, week 5 Sheldon Richardson comes back. And, you know, who knows what this defense can be, you know, 85 Bears like. It could be phenomenal, but it all starts with the quarterback. You know, I mean, you can't win without a decent quarterback. A guy like Trent Dilfer is one of, you know, I'm not saying the Jets defense is going to be like that Ravens defense, but I mean, Geno Smith, he has to, you know, just get his mindset. And I think moving in with Brandon Marshall, even though he has had some trouble as a head case in his earliest career. You know, what I really like from Brandon Marshall also is that a few weeks ago he went to the AFC Rookie Symposium. You know, he talked to all the rookies about the mistakes he made early on in his career. And, you know, I bet he's been talking to Geno Smith that, you know, every day he's been living with him. So, I mean, you know, practicing every day with a guy who's been an all-pro, you know, an all-pro type of wide receiver in Brandon Marshall, I think is going to, you know, prove dividends for Geno Smith. But to answer your question, Eli Manning – to the Jets, I would do unexplainable things for that to happen. I don't think it's gonna happen though.
Okay, so before you get off, we have to ask you. You know, you talked about Geno Smith, you talked about the draft, and you talked about some of the free agency. I just want to know, you know, what would you have done in the draft? Would you have drafted a guy like, you know, Brandon Scherff? Would you have traded up? Would you have took, you know, maybe one of the tackles a little bit earlier than they should have been took, where you just took a guy like Kevin White, you know, in free agency? Would you have rather seen the back situation
personally,
or, you know, how would you have handled it?
I would have done whatever it took to get Mariota or try to trade up. I don't know what, you know, I'm assuming the Titans were set on that as a quarterback, but you got to do something here at the quarterback position. It's Geno's third year. It's not. I just don't see it happening. I think he either had to trade up or maybe even take an offensive lineman. Maybe, you know, take Flowers or maybe take a chance on Gurley and then get rid of the rest of the running back core, because if the plan is to try to be like Alex Smith, and no offense against Alex Smith, I think he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league when he's got pass, you know, he's in the play action. But the years that Alex Smith is good, his defense is a monster, and he's got outstanding running backs, and the Jets running backs are not, you know, Johnson and Frank Gore when he was in San Francisco. So I just think you gotta work that play action angle, and you gotta get an offensive line. You gotta stop drafting defense. The Jets defense is one of the best in the league. I don't think you waste the first round pick, especially a top 10, and not get a lineman or a quarterback there.
You know, with the offensive line, I think Eric Flowers, you know, he was supposed to go mid-teens to early 20s. I really think a guy like Eric Flowers was a little bit of a reach for the Giants. I don't know, you know, how you feel necessarily on Eric Flowers. I think, you know, a guy like Scherff taking him as a guard is a little bit of a reach too. But I think, you know, coming into your first draft, McCagney kept preaching, you know, best player available. That's all he was saying. And then when it came down to it, he definitely took the best player available on the board. So I can't argue it. I understand how, you know, some people wanted offense and things like that. And I understand how some people think about Geno, but really he's the only option this year. And I think trading up for a guy like Mariota or a guy like Winston, when you're not completely sure, you know, about them and they're in a GM's first year, is definitely a risky move. But, you know, we definitely appreciate the call. You know, we're going to move on to the next caller, Will. We definitely, you know, appreciate it. And we hope you call back again and, you know, whenever you can.
All right. Thank you.
Later, Will.
Later.
And we are going to Don. He wants to talk about running backs and Sheldon Richardson. What's up, Don?
Hey, how you doing, fellas? This is my second time calling. I was able to get in this week. Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick point about the running back situation. I think with Stephen Ridley, you know what I think is going to happen is they're probably going to put him on the injured reserve, the 6 weeks injured reserve, and have him come in when he's fully healthy with that knee, instead of rushing him. Because even if you've seen any interviews or read any articles about it, he's kind of nonchalant about the injury. He's saying he's not going to come back too early. I don't think you're going to really see too much of him this summer. I think they're going to take it easy because they feel like they have a lot of depth at running back right now. and they'll put him on the 6 weeks, and depending on after the 6 weeks what's going on with the running back, if we are in desperate need of some production, then they'll activate him. But if the running backs are doing good and are healthy, they might wind up either trading them or releasing them after the season comes in. I don't see them starting in, on the active list in the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think if that happens, that's going to be a big role for, you know, Zach Stacy to fill. You know, he's going to have basically a five-week audition to see what he can do. You know, we've seen what he can do. He's only 24 years old. He had that, you know, 1,000-yard season a few years ago with the Rams, you know, before Trey Mason came in. But I mean, it's gonna come down to really what Chris Ivory can do. You know, if Chris Ivory can be Chris Ivory and stay injury free, you know what the guy can do when given the touches. You know, when given 20 touches, this guy's gonna put up 100 yards every game. You know, the Jets still have a top 15, in my opinion, close to a top 10 offensive line with two guys who have been all pros before, with Mangold and DeBrickashaw Ferguson. But I mean, I think that third down role, that, you know, a second, you know, a goal line role, of whatever the Jets envision Stephen Ridley of being, is going to be what Zach Stacy is going to be given early on in the season. So, I mean, I think you're right. If the running backs are struggling, if Zach Stacy, you know, is putting up 3 yards a carry like he was doing in St. Louis, if Chris Ivory, you know, is battling a hamstring and rib injury like he did last year, and they're quite frankly just not giving Bilal Powell carries, I think Stephen Ridley is going to come in, you know, week six, right after that, you know, after that he's going to have a nice bye season. So he's going to miss 5 games for the Jets, and then come in and have a chance to play 11 games. You know, the guy 2 years ago put up close to 1,300 yards at the Patriots. So, I mean, I really think Stephen Ridley can come in. You know, I really think he could come in and help this team, especially if, you know, if they're faltering. But the weapons the Jets have, you know, put around all the running backs and, the receivers, they're just going to complement each other. And I think whatever happens, I think Stephen Ridley is going to come back, you know, like you said, start the year on that pup list. Come back, you know, week six, maybe even week seven if it takes him a little longer, and come in and contribute. So, you know, the guy, you know, I know the guy's dedicated to the Jets because you see that tattoo he got on his forearm with the Jets logo on it. So, I mean, I don't think the guy's going to do that if he, you know, thinks he's not going to play this year.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, Vinny, because I've been with some people who, you know, they get a little drunk at bars and they just see a Coors Light logo and they get a Coors Light. Let's just say I know a guy who got a Coors Light, a big, huge Coors Light Mountains on his thigh because he was drunk. So I don't know if that necessarily means that he's dedicated to the team. But, you know, no, it's definitely true. He's probably gonna start the list on the pup list, just like a guy like D. Milner. That might actually happen with him. And it's a great audition for a guy like Zach Stacy. Look at Zach Stacy. He has all these games to prove it, and obviously he averaged 3.9 yards a carry for both years of the Rams. So he was decently effective. He doesn't have a great quarterback there to take pressure off of the run game. He doesn't have great receivers there. So we'll see what he can do with the Jets. He has a tryout. If the Jets really like what Ridley's doing in training camp, when, you know, Zach Stacy gets the few touches that he does, if he doesn't perform, then they can easily cut him and not think twice about it and then go along with a guy like Ridley. So it's definitely going to be a very interesting situation. The running back is I know we don't have that pass-catching type of running back, but it's definitely a stacked position, not with great talent, but with, you know, with solid talent. But, Don, you know, what do you think about the splitting between the carries with the running backs? You know, who do you want to get the most carries? Who's going to be the third down back? You know, how do you think it's going to play out in Changelli's offense with a guy like Chris Ivory, who people have said doesn't necessarily fit this type of offense?
Well, I definitely think that Ivory is going to get the bulk of the carries. He's going to be the workhorse. Basically, like you said, the main thing with him is injuries. He was last year was his first year, I believe, playing all 16 games. So you figure you don't want to wear him out too much. So, but I think that's why they're probably going to keep a bunch of running backs with the Stacy and Bilal Powell. I think Bilal Powell is a person that is going to most coaches is going to like. So I can't see them getting rid of Bilal Powell right now. That's why I figured that Whitmacullough will probably go on the injury reserve list for 6 weeks. But I think Powell will have a big opportunity in the first few weeks too. Zach Stacy, I would hope that he shows and looks good in the summer, but you never know. Like I said, he did good the rookie year, and then last year was downhill. Now, also, St. Louis Rams offensive line was horrible, too, so we can't put everything on Zach Stacy because their line was crazy, terrible. So he has an opportunity to come in here and show and prove. And I think he comes in with confidence because he was upset that they did draft another running back, especially after drafting the running back last year who took a lot of his carries, too. I wanted to say real fast about Sheldon Richardson. I couldn't believe it that you know, especially when I found out that, you know, you don't get suspended for the first time. So obviously he was caught before, and then finding out that they actually tell you when you're gonna when you're not on the list, they basically tell you when you're gonna be tested. And for you to be so stupid and get caught multiple times, knowing that you're going to get suspended, and now the next time it happens, you're putting yourself in a situation where you definitely going to cost yourself money. You know what I mean? I'm looking at it as far as a fan and the team aspect, obviously, but I'm looking at both aspects because, you know, as fans, we kind of put ourselves, you know, we kind of like to dream and be like, if we was in this situation, what we would do. And I can't fathom me doing something, not even being around people that smoke, and I don't even want to be around it. I'm not jeopardizing anything as a young player who's on a rookie contract, and you ain't even getting the money that the rookies 10 years ago got in your position. You getting a lot less than what they got, and your big money is going to come after your rookie contract, and you're not going to hold no weight. That's why I think that the Jets, they're not going to do nothing this year, but I can see them trying to move him before or at the draft and maybe pick up some additional picks, and hopefully they will give Mo an extension. I don't know if it's going to happen anytime this season. It'll probably have to wait till next offseason because I think I don't think Brickenshaw will be back, and that money will come, I believe it'll come off the cap because I know he has a high salary. So hopefully they'll work that out before next year starts rolling. So as far as the quarterback, that's a pipe dream. Giants will never allow Eli Manning to go to the Jets.
I was gonna ask you if you're the if you're the Don from Twitter.
Exactly.
I agree with you that getting Eli Manning is definitely a pipe dream, and I agree with you the whole, you know, Wilkerson and Sheldon thing. Let's just say that I can definitely probably think that a guy like Sheldon Richardson makes, you know, our two salaries, my years and Vinny's salaries combined, and times 30 over. So for him to lose $3 million is just ridiculous. I work for a lot less money than a guy like Sheldon Richardson does. And do I like that I have to come into my job clean shaven every single day? No, but do I come in, you know, having my face as smooth as a baby's bottom? Yes, I do, because I'm disciplined and I'm mature for, you know, to have a full-time job. You know, it's just stupid that he actually does this stuff. I'm pretty sure that we all have stupid rules that we don't do at our work. I can't go on my phone. You probably can't go on your phone. Vinny probably has to do some weird things. Whatever Vinny has to do, I'm pretty sure he has some weird stories about his job. I don't really know what he does. He's kind of like an agent over there. We definitely appreciate the call. Don, we'll have our, you know, we'll shout you out on Twitter. I know this is your second time calling in, but I hope you call in more often. I hope to hear from you. You definitely brought some great knowledge. You know, not many Jets fans just can spew out stats like that. You know, Chris Ivory, his first year playing 16 games of last year. So we definitely appreciate your knowledge, and we appreciate you calling us and giving us your support.
Thank you. So hopefully I'll speak to you in the next, if not the next week, next few weeks before training camp comes up. And hopefully we'll have a good season this year, fellas.
Awesome, Don. Looking forward to talking to you again. And now we are going to Brandon, who wants to talk about Geno and Sheldon. Can you hear us, Brandon?
Hey, guys. How are you? What's going on,
Brandon?
Doing
good, man. What's up?
Yeah, you know, the whole Sheldon thing for me, I say it a lot, is, you know, when your role models, you know, you're making all this money and you understand that there are specific rules and guidelines that you need to follow, I think doing such a thing is not only bad for the team and you're sending bad example kids, but I mean, it's selfish because you're hurting the team, you know, big time, and you're hurting yourself because you lose money. And I just can't understand why guys, you know, would obviously, you know, do drugs and stuff like that. You know, when
they're playing. I'm sure you guys agree. You know, I just think it's foolish. You know, I mean, you put a lot on the line. I mean, now you know. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. Just you know, there's definitely some stupid rule you have at work. Give me one stupid rule. I'm pretty sure you know you sound old enough to have a job. I'm pretty sure you're not 13 years old. You know, you sound at least our age or older. So you know, give us a stupid rule. Let's just you know, what rule do you listen to at work that you know you necessarily don't want to listen to? I have to shave every day. I can't be on my phone. I have to wear my hat. You know, there's stupid things I do, but if I know if I don't do them, I'm going to get fired. So, you know, to smoke weed and lose $3 million a year is just it's absolutely ridiculous. So, first tell me something stupid that you have to do. Vinny, I want to hear from you. And then, you know, give us your opinion on the whole entire Wilkerson and Sheldon situation because, you know, in past weeks it was Wilkerson. It was, are we going to sign him? Are we going to allocate that money to the offensive line? Is are we going to replace Ferguson? You know, $14 million. What are we going to do? So first give us your, you know, stupid rule, and then tell us what your opinion on who we should sign and where we should allocate that money if we don't sign one of them.
Well, the dumbest thing that I have to do at work is, and it's, I'm sure you have to do it every job, you know, but it's like a very, very annoying thing. It's, I work at a country club, right? So I have to wear very specific
rich people all the time.
Attire. Very, yeah. Very specific attire. If I'm not wearing the right pants, shoes, I get called out. I have been sent home before for not wearing the proper shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. No, you think I'm lying, but
I get. Trust me, I came in not clean shaven one day from my work, and they give you a razor and make you go in the back room. I remember one time a guy walked into briefing late. You know, he walked in 2 minutes late, and they made him do push-ups in the middle of the floor in front of everybody. So we all have stupid rules. But, you know, give us your opinion. Who are we keeping? Would you rather have Wilkerson for $13 million a year? Would you rather have a guy like Sheldon for $16 million a year? When obviously he's a bigger risk with these drug things. And he's obviously, from what we can tell, he's a more immature player and he's more demanding.
I mean, for me, I love Wilkerson. I mean, I used to go to a lot of Temple games back when you played. His family out there, so we would go to games and I just think that Muhammad's more proven. You know, I mean, I understand Richardson's had a great, you know, first couple of years, and I respect that entirely. But I think that you have to go with the proven guy. I mean, my whole thing is, you know, we can keep both. I think you need to because aside from the fact that Richardson has his issues, I think that his talent far outweighs it. And, you know, I hate admitting that because I hate the whole dudes that, you know, do all that stuff and I think it's dumb. But, you know, maybe if he finally learns his lesson, you know, maybe you can keep both. But if I had to choose one or the other, I go with Wilkerson. You know, it's tough because, like you said, you know, the offensive line takes a lot of money between really Mangold and Brick, you know. So, I mean, at one point or another, one of them I would think had to take some type of pay cut, you know, if they really want to stick around. If not, you know, then you got to cut Wilkerson or Richardson loose. I prefer Muhammad. You know, he's been doing it longer than Richardson has.
Yeah, Vinny, you know, what do you think? You've talked about it before. You know, if it really came down to it and you had to choose Wilkerson for $13 million a year type of contract or Alex Sheldon for 16, I know, you know, we have years. We have Sheldon Richardson, you know, here for basically three more years if we want. We have Wilkerson for, you know, at least another two. You know, what do you do in this situation? What do you think?
I mean, but, you know, by this offseason, you know, if I told you that Mo Wilkerson was 25 and Sheldon Richardson was 24, they sure aren't acting like it. You know, Sheldon Richardson acting like you know, obviously like a rookie again, you know, and Mo Wilkerson acting like a 10-year vet. But, I mean, Mo Wilkerson, I mean, again, I mean, I don't know how many times Mo Wilkerson has to do the right thing over and over again, say the right things, and just do everything the right way and, you know, go about it, you know. You know, like the old Jet way, basically. You know, the guy really has done everything what the Jets asked from a guy who, you know, obviously was a first-round pick, a later first-round pick, and he's acted, you know, acting the part. Well, you know, Sheldon Richardson comes in, wins Rookie of the Year, you know, loud mouth talking on the field, jibber-jabbing. And, yes, I credit that a lot to Rex Ryan, but, I mean, Sheldon Richardson was that type of guy in college, too. So, I mean,
he's going to talk no matter who his coach is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think he's gonna, you know, that's just the nature of his play. So, I mean, Mo Wilkerson, I mean, the guy is, you know, besides Sheldon Richardson, I really think it's a 1A, 1B. Mo Wilkerson, this guy has been doing everything. The guy can really do it all. You know, I mean, I really think you've got to keep Mo Wilkerson, you know, because what happens if they sign him to a suit deal? And there he goes, failing another drug test out half the year. And there, you know, there goes, you know, a year of his contract. And, you know, then we got to, you know, all those things that can just spiral downward. Like you said before, like we've seen with a Josh Gordon, like a Justin Blackman, the list goes on and on of players who have just, you know, not done the right thing. You know, and Sheldon Richardson hasn't even got, you know, that big payday yet, which is so frustrating for a player, you know, just to be in his caliber, his position right now. And just to do this, it's not fair to the Jets, you know, putting a rookie head coach, a rookie GM in this position. It's just disappointing. That's why, I mean, right now, if I had to choose, yeah, it would be Mo Wilkerson.
Okay. So yeah, Brandon, before we let you go, I definitely want to ask you a quick question first. You know, you're talking about Sheldon. I know you're talking about, you know, and Wilkerson and all these things that are really going to be interesting situations, but just give me your overall impression of the defense. You know, where do you think this defense ranks at the end of the season? Obviously the Jets were ranked, what, was sixth last year, but when you actually look at the stats, you know, their red zone defense was terrible. Their third down defense was terrible. So they were really middle of the pack to maybe a little bit lower than middle of the pack defense, in my opinion. It's actually, you know, kind of sad at times. And it's sad to see that we were ranked sixth. I hate that the stats are only, you know, based on yards and things like that. But overall, you know, what do you think? What are your expectations for the defense this year? Where do you think we end up?
I mean, I feel like top three is reasonable. I don't think I'm being, you know, too crazy with that. I mean, you know, I think, you know, even without Richardson for the first four games, I think that the fact that we drafted Leonard Williams, I mean, if that doesn't look like a great pick now, then, you know, people are crazy because, you know, we had depth with Richardson, you know, so that's why losing him is bad, but we have guys that can step up. I mean, our linebacking core, I don't think is bad. I think Harris and DeMario definitely hold it down in the middle. I love Quentin Cobles. I've always loved him. You know, Snacks, Wilkerson, you know, Williams is, you know, to be seen, but, you know, I think they'll get the job done. And what I think is the biggest thing for us is the secondary. You know, I mean, you have Revis and Cromartie locking down the number one and number two, and you have Buster Skrine and the nickel. You know, you're going to have Milner whenever he gets on the field. And my favorite guy that we got for the defense was Gilchrist, because what we lacked was a ball-hawking safety. You know, now you can let Pryor play strong, you let Gilchrist play free, and you let him just do whatever he wants. Let him follow the ball. You know, Pryor's going to hit dudes. You know, that's what he does best. I just think the defense is really going to look great this year. It's going to look like how it used to. And that's, I mean, I love defense. So, you know, I'm excited. And we're going to get a ton of coverage sacks. A ton.
No doubt about it. You know, you definitely make great points. The cornerback situation and maybe this whole secondary is probably a top five secondary in this league. I know, you know, there's obviously weak points at safety possibly. You look at the defensive line. You look at the three main guys. Obviously, you have the Sons of Anarchy. And then you bring in a guy like Williams. You have a guy like Duzible, who is underrated as a depth player. He's actually, you know, really solid depth type of a player. So the defensive line is definitely going to get some coverage sacks. Can you imagine how many sacks, you know, Sheldon Richardson and Wilkerson would have had last year? You know, if guys like Revis and Cromartie were there instead of guys, you know, like a Marcus Williams, a Phillip Adams were there. So the defense definitely has top five expectations. I think honestly, anywhere below top five or maybe even top three would be disappointing. I think a lot of Jets fans have really, really high expectations because the difference between the 2009-2010 teams is obviously the cornerbacks are a little bit older, but you see Revis, he was playing at a very, very high level last year, still probably the best cornerback in football, in my opinion. You have a guy in Cromartie who I believe only let up two touchdowns, and that was against Demaryius Thomas. So they're both solid, and his defensive line is completely different than a, you know, Sione Puha and a Sean Ellis and a Chris Jenkins. Chris Jenkins was hurt all the time. So this defense definitely has, you know, 2009-2010 potential even better. But Brandon, we definitely appreciate the call. We hope you call back in soon, and we definitely appreciate your support.
Thank you guys. Love the show, man. I will definitely be calling again in the future.
All right. Thanks,
awesome.
Brandon.
Thank you, Brandon. Talk to you soon.
Have a good night, guys.
You too, bud.
And now we are bringing on Sean, who wants to talk about Calvin Pace, I believe. What is up, Sean?
Hi, first time caller. I just wanted to get your take on Calvin Pace and potentially losing his starting job. He's already 34, and he got his lowest career tackle total since he became a starter. And they took the third-round draft pick, Lorenzo Maldini from Louisville. I think he could be a great player, help on special teams to just be superior in coverage. So I just wanted to call and get your take. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. I mean, you know, you make a good point there. Calvin Pace, you know, he's, you know, the veteran of this defense, 34 years old, like you said. Guy's been for the Jets for over, I think, 6 or 7 years right now. You know, one of the longest tenured Jets on defense. And, you know, Lorenzo Maldon, I know this guy, you know, you've seen what he can do in college. You know, everyone knows his upbringing by now, you know, traveling from home to home as a kid, you know, built up such a, you know, a strong sense of belonging. That's the words he kept using in his interview. But I mean, Lorenzo Maldon has a chance to be a impact player early on in his career. I think he's going to come in as a rookie on special teams, on third down situations. You know, and Calvin Pace, you know, if he struggles early on, who knows? His role can be impacted. I mean, this is a team who ranked sixth last year in sacks. And that's without, you know, obviously the additions of this revamped defensive back system. You know, I've got with obviously, you know, all the players that we added with Revis, with Cromartie, with Screen, you know, with Gilchrist, you know, having Calvin Pryor back in his normal spot. I think it's going to be a huge year for Quinn Coples. Guy averaged 5.5 sacks in his first 3 years. You know, I think it's time for him to shine. You know, Calvin Pace, you know, he's definitely older, you know, but he still has been there for a while. He knows how to get it done. I think he's going to really teach Maldon how to excel in this system. You know, and you look at Coach Bowles' system last year, you know, all linebackers that stepped up after Darrell Washington, their leading tackler, went down. So I mean, it's gonna be fun to watch what Maldon can do. The guy's a freak athletic. You know, if you watch his tape, the guy can do anything on the defensive side. He can line up. He can cover. I think it's a great fit for him with all these linebackers that they have. You know, add some youth to it, because you know, like you just said, Calvin Pace is 34. David Harris is up there in age. We just re-signed him. So I mean, you know, we got him, Maldon, and Demario Davis, two guys who can, you know, really run fast. They can really cover. And it's gonna be good to see, and I think that's gonna open up a lot of holes for Quinn Coples. It has to be the year that Quinn Coples has to excel. You know, again, he's a 16th overall pick. You know, he just hasn't performed up to that level so far. But with all these additions, he's gonna have his one-on-one coverage. You know, it's gonna be nice to see what he can do. You know, Calvin Pace is gonna have his one-on-one coverage as well. But Maldon, I think he has a chance. You know, early on in his career, I don't expect too much his first year. Maybe three to five sacks in that range, but I'm very excited to see what he can do on the special teams and in third down situation, you know, whether it be taking out a fullback, you know, rushing the edge, covering a, you know, a tight end. You know, the guy's really, you know, really jacked, obviously. He's a built dude, and he can really, you know, he can flash it. He can flash his athleticism like he did in Louisville, and, you know, he's going to be someone I think the Jets are going to value, not as a third-round pick, maybe like a second, you know, even, you know, a guy who can really, you know, come on and as a rookie and develop very, very quickly with all the leadership that is around him.
Yeah, no, you look at, you know, there's already stories coming out that he's performing well in camp, and we have to see what happens with that. Tim Tebow is a guy who performs well in camp, and then he comes out during the season, and obviously he just sucks. So we'll have to see how that, you know, really, really comes out to play. But, you know, a guy like Pace, I don't know if he's necessarily going to lose his job. I don't think we'll cut him. I think what's going to happen, though, is the thing with Sheldon Richardson too, the situation which we haven't talked about, and just make a, you know, quick point about it, is do we cut an extra off outside linebacker now? You know, is there a safety who's dropped? Maybe we're planning on keeping like a guy like a Rontez Miles or a Darrell Eskridge, or maybe, you know, Tywan Jones is going to find some time, but maybe now, because, you know, Todd Bowles likes to play those four defensive linemen a lot. Mm-hmm. Maybe now we keep a Vickerson, or we keep a Bowen, or we keep a TJ Barnes, and maybe now a guy like a Pace or like a Babin loses their job. But, you know, the thing with Maldon is, like, I think he's going to start off the year backing up a Calvin Pace, and I think he's going to learn a lot from a Calvin Pace, because he's kind of like a Calvin Pace-esque type player. You know, he's not going to get, you know, 10 sacks a year. He's not the type of guy. He's more of a run stuffer who has some athleticism, who will be able to get to the, you know, the quarterback sometimes, but he's not going to be putting up, you know, 10, 15 sacks a year. So I think learning behind a guy like Calvin Pace for maybe, you know, the first couple of games would be a good thing. I'm not saying that Calvin Pace is going to start the whole year. I actually think that Maldon, you know, will take the job, you know, probably by mid-season. But by the end of the season, I think he should be starting if he plays up to his full potential. But, you know, the outside linebacker, just in general, that's going to be an interesting position to see because, you know, is a guy like Babin, who I believe is, you know, 34, 35, is he going to lose his job? Is a guy like IK going to step up, who really showed some flashes last year? And, you know, you don't see him on a stat sheet, but when you watch some of his film and you watch, you know, even the Colts preseason game or even the last couple of games, he gets to the quarterback a lot. He disrupts the pocket a lot. He's really good with bull rushing. He's really strong, you know, stocky little guy. A guy like we know, he's probably like comparable to like a, you know, like Kev Quinn was in the NFL. You know, he's that short little stocky guy who just has a mean streak. So we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, to get off the Calvin Pace topic, you know, we said we were going to get to the, you know, the breakout player on each side of the ball. So I definitely want to do that. Obviously, you know, we just had a whole bunch of callers and we really do appreciate the support. And we hope that all you guys keep calling in every week. And I hope the people who are, you know, who aren't calling in, who are maybe, you know, feeling the show out or whatever, call in next week and we'll definitely love to talk to you. We love talking to Jets fans. You know, we're diehard Jets fans. You know, even on Sundays when we potentially do this show and we're doing a show from MetLife Stadium, we hope you guys come up to the tailgate, play some cornhole with us, you know, maybe challenge us in some beer pong. Even though I really think you'll probably lose in beer pong, we're definitely going to win. But you can challenge us. It's, you know, it's fun for a challenge, but I doubt we'll lose. But, you know, Vinny, give me your breakout player on the offensive side of the ball for 2015 Jets season.
On offense, you know, I wasn't the Geno when I first came up with this, but after talking about him.
No, you're taking the easy way out. Give me one guy.
All right. I'm going to go with DeBrickashaw Ferguson then. You know, I mean, you know, the left tackle, you know that's why DeBrickashaw Ferguson. That's who my breakout player is going to be this year. You know, the guy, I was watching a bunch of videos on him. You know, he's really, he is really working on his technique this offseason. You know, he knows his game has slumped the last few years. And this is a huge year for him. You know, obviously, like Carlos said before, his cap hit is huge for next year. But I think that DeBrickashaw Ferguson is a guy who he's going to break out. I wouldn't say break out, but I say just get back to form, really. Because this guy, you know, and you know, obviously, you know, about four to five years ago when he was in his prime, was a guy who was, you know, one of the top two best left tackles in the game. You know, coming out of Virginia, the guy was a tank. So I mean, I really think that this is going to be. Breaking out is a strong word. I mean, on offensive side, there's so many names that you can do. I mean, I was gonna say Jason Mara, but I mean, I'm not really sold on him too yet. But I'm going to go with DeBrickashaw Ferguson, bud. I mean, I really think this is going to be a year where he's going to, you know, come back to form and really break out again, you know, with this Jets revamped team, really revamped offense and revamped defense.
Well, no, then you can make the point that, you know, the left guard situation the last couple of years with, you know, rotating guys in and out, you know, the Matt Slauson left, and then you had a whole bunch of different guys rotating in and out, you know, whoever it be, can definitely help out a guy like a Mangold and like a DeBrickashaw Ferguson. So maybe he does break out. I don't know if I necessarily put him as a breakout player just because he was already there. Maybe he has a revamped year. Just like a Nick Mangold did, you know, 2013, he was struggling a little bit. You saw him have some lapses, and, you know, in just the mental part of the game. And then he comes back in 2014, and he was rated the best center in the NFL. I don't necessarily think he's the best center in the NFL. I think he's top three. But maybe he has a revamped year like that. And, you know, you stole my thunder there a little bit. But I'm going to go with a guy like Jason Morrow. You know, with the things happening with Rex Ryan after Rex left, after, you know, obviously a couple weeks after him and Rex were talking crap to each other, you see the fact that Jeff Crumbland played, 60-70% of the snaps when he can't really makes big plays, but he can't catch. There's some games where he's just jogging. He missed some throws because of that. He obviously can't block. We saw that in multiple games this year where they put him on Giacomini's side to try to block a speed rusher like a Cannon Wake, and he barely even got a hand on him. He looked like his arms were, you know, he had T-Rex arms and he couldn't even touch the guy. So a guy like Jeff Crumbland, it was really questionable last year. And for a guy like Jason Morrow who, you know, came from Texas Tech, and obviously he's raw. When you see a guy like that have 10 catches against the Broncos, and he was really playing in the beginning of the year, and he's playing decently well. I know he had the 6 drops. But in the beginning of the year, even against the Lions, he had some decent games. He showed some flashes. And for whatever reason, you know, the last 10 games, he was never on the field. You never saw him. And when he was blocking guys. I think a guy like Chan Gailey will use him well. I'm not saying a guy like Jason Morrow is going to get 1,000 yards, but I think you can expect, you know, a 40 to 45-yard catch year, you know, potentially with, you know, 4 or 5 touchdowns. I think he'll be using the red zone a little bit more than he was last year. you know, I'm not expecting 1,000 yards, but I'm saying, like, you know, maybe 400, 500 yards for a guy like Jason Morrow would be a breakout year for him. I think he'll be solid under Chan Gailey. Like I said, he's going to be more of an H-back, more of a slot type of tight end, like a Jimmy Graham, like a Gronkowski, spread out wide, even potentially on the outside by the sidelines. So we'll see what happens with him, but I think Chan Gailey will use him well. I think guys like Curley, Devin Smith, Marshall, Decker drawing attention away from him. If he can just, you know, work on looking the ball in and catching the damn ball and then running, then, you know, he can really break out, especially if he's playing 75% of the snaps instead of 34th was last year, which I just think is absolutely ridiculous. So we'll see. But, you know, defense, Vinny, give me your breakout player on the defensive side of the ball.
I mean, defense is a toss-up between Calvin Pryor and Cole Pools, but I'm going with Pryor. You know, he was doomed from the start last year, you know, playing in a very poor secondary, playing out of position. This guy is used to playing inside the box, you know, 2, 3, 4 yards away from the line of scrimmage, not 25 yards downfield. Luckily for him, he goes from playing with a practice squad, basically, to playing with a few all-pros in Cromartie and Revis. You know, that's going to take loads of pressure off him, allows him to be that run-stopping, hard-hitting player he was at Louisville. You know, pair him up with another safety in Gilchrist who has played in an NFL for, you know, 4 to 5 years. You know, he's coming into a defense where he, you know, doesn't have to be, you know, the guy covering the tight end, you know, down the field, not having to, you know, lock up a receiver as a safety, playing, you know, 20 to 30 yards downfield like Rex Ryan had him playing last year. So, I mean, Calvin Pryor, you know, he had the concussion early on. You know, it was a really, really difficult rookie season for the kid. I mean, look what the Jets did to him. I mean, if I'm Calvin Pryor, I got to be, you know, salivating. This is gonna be a year where he's gonna be asked to, you know, blitz outside, you know, pressure and, you know, go take out the quarterback, take out a running back. It's gonna be where he was in Louisville, and you know the guy can cover too. And so I mean, it's gonna be definitely something I really look forward to Calvin Pryor this year. But I mean, I'm gonna give it Calvin Pryor, yeah, because Quinn Coples, I think he knows he has to break out. And I think Calvin Pryor doesn't feel like he has to, but he's going to. So, I mean, I don't think the pressure is necessarily there on Calvin Pryor this year as opposed to Coples.
Yeah, no, you look at a guy like a Calvin Pryor, like you said, you know, he's playing next to a guy like Gilchrist, who obviously played a little bit more strong safety and the slot corner type of role with the Chargers, but hopefully he'll be a decent free safety. Obviously, last year that was kind of a turnstile with different safeties coming in, with different corners coming in and things like that. So, you know, Calvin Pryor definitely has a chance. He shouldn't have been playing, you know, 20, 30 yards deep in deep coverage zones and things like that. He's more of a linebacker. He'll be used like, a Buchanan was used last year with the Cardinals, where he was almost more of a linebacker than he really was a safety. So I think Calvin Pryor definitely has a shot. And obviously Brian Dawkins is my favorite player ever. So if a guy like Calvin Pryor who can hit people and knock their heads off can really step up, I'd really love that. I really wasn't too down on the pick, you know, in 2013, like most people were, but I think a lot of people really started hating the pick after the fact when he started, you know, having the last minute coverages after the Packers game when he missed that tackle on Jordy Nelson, things like that. A lot of people are really good drafters after the fact. Not a lot of people had a problem with that pick during the time, but I'm going to go, you know, obviously I said IK before, and I think he might break out. I think he might take a guy like a Calvin, not a Calvin Pace, but a Jason Babin's role. I think you're going to see him more on third down, and he's going to get a couple sacks this year. So I think he'll be in it, and I'm going to take an easy way out and go with another player. I'm going to go with a Coples, like you said, you know, and like I've said in past weeks, like me and Brandon have talked about, like me and you have talked about off air. He's not going to be jamming receivers anymore. He's not going to be, you know, in coverage, dropping back in short zones and covering the flats like he did last year. Bowles is going to know how to use this guy. He's going to see a 290-pound guy who's almost like a defensive end, and he's going to put him on the edge next to a Wilkerson, next to a Leonard Williams, next to a guy like a Sheldon Richardson, and he's going to just pin his ear back. He's going to go after the quarterback. We saw what he did last year in the last couple of games when Wilkerson was out when he was playing DN. He didn't light up the stat sheet, but he actually had a very, very high number of pressures and a high number of quarterback hits. So I think that he really has a chance to, you know, get a 10-sack year. I'm not saying that he necessarily will, but if I had to put my money on it, I think he actually might, just because, you know, this defense, he'll be used right. He's not going to be jamming Antonio Brown. He's not going to be doing things like that. He's just going to be, like I said, paying his ear back. He's never going to get double-teamed, because if you're double-teaming a guy like Coples over a guy like a Wilkerson or Sheldon, then you're just absolutely insane. So I think a guy like Coples really, really the shot. to, you know, up that sack total by, you know, 3, 3.5, 4 than he got the last couple of years, especially, like we said, with this secondary. He's going to have, you know, another second or two to grab that quarterback with those long, huge freaking arms that he has with the whatever brand he has on there, which is ridiculous. But, you know, no, it's definitely going to be interesting to see what happens this year, Vinny. You know, there's a whole bunch of question marks. Is the offensive line going to play well? Is Jason Morrow going to break out? How is Copel going to play? Is Marcus Williams, you know, going to make the team? Is Gilchrist going to be a true free safety? Is he going to have lasting coverage like he did sometimes in San Diego? And we're definitely going to get to that next week. You know, we got a little caught up with Coles this week, but next week, you know, I definitely want to get to, you know, Geno's leash. I want to get to some underrated and overrated players like we did, you know, a couple weeks ago. I want to get to valued players on both sides of the ball. Some bold predictions. I'm going to get to some more. There's going to be some, hopefully no more news this week. Hopefully nobody else fails drug tests and things like that. So we'll see, but we definitely have a lot more to talk about this week, but Vinny, definitely. I think it was an awesome first show. I'm happy with all the callers. We definitely got a lot of support on Twitter. You know, we'll be tweeting some more after this. So get to me obviously at JoeRB31 on Twitter. Vinny, give out your Twitter where you can reach you, you know, how'd you feel about your first show? You know,
yeah, you know, my Twitter is, my name is Vinny Latoracca, LATORACA. If you just go on Gen Nation Radio, you know, there's a bunch of retweets going that. But, man, definitely a good show, you know. Obviously not what you want to be talking about with Sheldon Richardson, you know, obviously in the summer. You don't want to be talking to a guy, arguably one of your best players, being suspended for 4 games. But, you know, that's going to open up a hole for someone now. That's going to give Leonard Williams a chance to start. It's going to give IK some more reps. That's going to give Lorenzo Maltin, you know, some more reps on that defensive that line. So it's going to be, I mean, I think, I don't want to say it's a blessing in disguise, but it might as well be, because you don't, you know, you got to anticipate Sheldon Richardson's going to come back after that bye, you know, with his head straight. Hope he's not going to be loud now talking, knowing that he let down his teammates, let down his organization. You know, I think he's going to give some other players a chance to shine, and hopefully that's the case. And Sheldon Richardson, I want him to come back after that bye and, you know, earn his spot back, hopefully. You know, I want someone to take it from him, you know, early on the first 4 weeks. I want, you know, someone to break out, whether that be IK, whether that be a Leonard Williams, you know. So, I mean, I think it really helped out this team.
Yeah, no, definitely. And we definitely like to thank everybody who called in. You know, we'll get to you on Twitter in a little bit. I definitely thank Nick for running the Twitter. He's new to this, and he's actually doing a really, really good job on Twitter. Obviously, Jerry is the guy you talk to before you call here. We definitely thank Jerry. He's been around, you know, forever. He's a legend behind the call screening. So we definitely thank Jerry. We thank the callers. Follow us at Jet Nation Radio. Go check out JetNation.com. Check out the forums there. A whole bunch of Jets talk. Any topic you can think of, it's on JetNation.com forums. So check that out. And obviously we'll be back next week at 8 o'clock, and I'm definitely excited to do that. So we will talk to you guys next week.